if you devote yourself and you make a connection, you will help this child learn. The thing is, you have to eliminate time. You have to eliminate expectation and eliminate any conventional goals, or you just are in a timeless place. And whatever they learn, they learn. Whatever they do, they do. The most important thing is that they have a good time and that they enjoy the experience and that they feel good with the teacher.
You're watching Tim Topham TV, the piano teaching podcast, and this is episode number 59. Hello, everyone. Welcome back again to today's episode of the Piano Teaching Podcast. This is the place to be if you want to really take your piano teaching up a notch. If you want to learn from the best people around the world when it comes to any kind of aspect of your teaching, then you have definitely chosen the right channel to listen to. Now, today's episode is continuing on our theme of special needs teaching, and it's all about integrating music therapy and art therapy with Karen Nissenson. Now, if you've ever wondered what music therapy is all about and what art therapy is about and how it can all relate to special needs students, then today's episode is designed specially for you. Now, before we dive in, I would like you to check out novascore.com if you haven't done so already. The coupon code runs out at the end of this month, so do check it out. You can get 30% off the sheet music downloads at novascore.com for readers and viewers of Tim Topham TV during the month of September. Why would you want to go there? Well, the thing I love about NovaScore is that they've got different levels of difficulty of the pieces that are in their catalog. So rather than just going somewhere online and finding just one version of a Coldplay song, you can actually get that Coldplay song. But then if it's too hard for the student, you can find a couple of levels that are easier but still sound really good because they're written by pianists. They've got an in-house team of pianists who put together great arrangements that still sound good. They've got chord charts, they've got fingering, and all the information's in there. But the best part is that your student who might be struggling with a harder arrangement can actually get stuck into some music. They've got recent hits, classical, pop, jazz, blues, gospel, religious music, movie soundtracks, Christmas songs, everything. And it's growing all the time. You can view the music on any device, laptop or your computer, even your phone, and you can print from a computer or laptop to your heart's content your version of that score that you've downloaded. Interestingly enough, they've actually got this cool YouTube program that I found out about too. So they give out free sheet music to all pianists who film themselves playing their sheet music and then post their videos on YouTube with a link through to the relevant sheet music on NovaScore. How cool is that? So if you're interested in this, you can choose any title or level from the catalog and any form. So they've got different ones, piano solo, four hands piano, accompaniment, arranger, solo instrument, and post as many videos as you wish. So this is something that you could get your students to do. It'd be a pretty cool project, I think. Every video will appear on their YouTube playlist. And for studios wanting to do something different rather than just the old end of year recital, or for students that don't want to perform publicly, here's an awesome opportunity. So to find out more about NovaScore, please head to novascore.com. And if you want to grab that coupon code, head to timtopham.com/episode59. All right. Now, before we introduce today's guest, I did want to quickly remind you, if you're in Australia and you haven't got your ticket yet to Transform Your Teaching, the workshops that I'm running with Paul Myatt around Australia, then you need to grab them really soon. Head to timtopham.com/transform. And you'll find the dates when we're in most of the capital cities in September, October, and November. And I absolutely cannot wait to meet you. If you're listening to this podcast, you are exactly the kind of person that I would love to have at those live workshops. You get to sit in front of a digital piano. You get to play, perform, practice, talk, learn a whole lot. We're covering a whole lot of different things. And it's just going to be great fun. So make sure you grab your ticket, timtopham.com/transform. My guest today is Karen Nissenson. She's founder and clinical director of Arts for Healing. She holds a bachelor and master of music degree in piano performance from the Juilliard School, a bachelor of science from Hunter College, and a master of arts degree in music therapy from NYU, where she has been an adjunct professor and affiliated with the Nordoff Robbins Center for Music Therapy since 1978. Karen developed the Integrated Music and Art Therapy methodology and the Adaptive Music Teaching Curriculum, which she talks about in this interview. She's also created early childhood academic programs specifically designed for children on the autism spectrum. Karen has such an awesome wealth of knowledge for us, and I know will contribute to your continued development of the thoughts around special needs teaching that we're covering this month on the blog and the podcast. She's great fun to talk to, and I know you're going to enjoy it. So here's my interview all about music therapy and art therapy and some tricks and tactics for working particularly with students with autism. Here's Karen. G'day, Karen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Now, I connected with you through Neil Moore of Simply Music, who we featured in episode 49, and I think you guys have started working together. So can you tell me what the project's about?
The project is called Simply Music Gateway. I met Neil a few years ago. I resonated with his philosophy that everyone can play music and everyone should play music in their lives. Excuse me, I'm turning my phone off. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I work with special needs children and adults. I work with people who have processing disorders, fine motor problems, and I have that same philosophy that everyone should be able to do music. And when I learned about his program through one of the kids that I was working with, who was looking for another type of program, that's when I learned about Simply Music, and the artwork really intrigued me. I didn't know any other music that had such beautiful artwork. And I emailed him and told him about my work and if he was interested in meeting and talking about it. And he said yes, and we connected and we talked about our resonating philosophies. And he had always thought about incorporating special needs. So we got together and it's been going forward. And I was just there in Sacramento in August, and I videoed teacher training videos of Simply Music Gateway Part 1, which is how to teach special needs children and adults on the autism spectrum, or kids with behavior problems, ADD, kids with fine motor problems, just helping teachers become familiar with the issues and the joys of working with special needs.
Great. So you've, as well as that work, you've actually got your own organization called Arts for Healing, right?
Right.
So can you tell us what that's about? Because I'm quite interested in the whole idea of arts and healing and music therapy and stuff.
Yeah, well, my background is as a pianist, and then I also got another degree in creative arts therapy a long time ago. And in 2000, I live in Connecticut, in New Canaan, Connecticut, in Fairfield County. And in 2000, I started this organization in order to bring music and art therapy and theater and dance and yoga, just the arts in general, to bring the arts to special education. And when I started, people didn't really know what that was about. Was at a time before Autism Speaks, before the statistics of autism grew. And I had to educate the public as I started this organization. I had been teaching at NYU for 25 years and working at the Nordoff Robbins Music Therapy Center in New York, working in other capacities, freelance, playing, writing, music therapy. So when I started this organization, I wanted to bring it to my area. And it's now 2016, and we're still here, which is amazing for a nonprofit. And we're growing and expanding. And we have 8 therapists working. I've developed a method called integrated music and art therapy, where I paint and do music, and we work on issues and target specific goals like language and speech, personal growth, emotional development, behavior, fine and gross motor. So, you know, we work with the schools. We have outreach programs in schools and institutions, and we see babies through elderly with Alzheimer's. So the organization has grown. It's artsforhealing.org, if anyone wants to look it up. .org, not .com.
Yep.
You'll get another organization in California.
Right. Okay, cool. So look, I've heard about music therapy before, and it's a degree you can study and all that. What would I see if I went into a room and someone was doing music therapy with a student?
Well, music therapy is a pretty wide field. So, you know, you might see very different kind of things. Music therapy is goal-oriented, interactive, improvisational type music, working on specific issues. So if you saw a child with autism, for instance, you might see a child playing a drum and I would be at the piano improvising on the child's beat or on the child's sound if they go ah, ooh, ee, whatever. And it's really creating music around what you're given as a stimuli from that child. So if it's a beat, if it's just one drum, it's to elicit communication. And so if you get into the energy of that child and that groove of that child's healing, you can bring them out into a musical conversation. So what you would see is a child maybe playing a drum, a xylophone, but it would sound like the child is making music. And depending on what level they're at, maybe they'd be singing, vocalizing sounds if the goal was speech and language for a nonverbal child. So you would see a lot of improvisational sound, toning, playing. Maybe the child would come over and bang at the piano. Maybe they would play xylophone. But music therapy would be a variety of instruments and opportunities to explore creativity and self-expression.
And less about the teacher going, here's what we're doing today, and more about the students driving it with their own bodies and mouths.
It is. Very much not about teaching. It's
right.
I mean, that's a different thing that I do, but music therapy is not about learning. If they happen to learn from the experience, it's just kind of like a side effect. But it's not the goal. It's not about learning. And if you work with an autistic child, you can't say, oh, come, let's do this or do that. They don't listen. I mean, especially a profoundly autistic child, you have to connect. You have to get in on a level where you can start interacting. And since music is a nonverbal language, you can get the child interested from the beat, or you can get them in through a harmony or a song. And so you kind of start communicating and talking to that child through music. But it is not about teaching. But answer your question about music therapy. If you saw music therapy in a psychiatric hospital with adults, that might look very different. That might look like a group setting or somebody trying to make up songs or trying to verbalize emotion. Somebody with Alzheimer's might be vocalizing or also improvising on different words. It depends. There's music therapy in hospitals for pediatric hospital. There's music therapy for neonatal care to calm little babies who are preemies. There's Sloan Kettering Hospital in New York for cancer, where music therapy is about physically relaxing, getting into yourself on a whole different level. So depending on the population, depending on the goal, it's going to be different. Maybe the activities will be a little different. But what's the same is that it's about connection.
Yeah.
It's not about learning or teaching. It's about connection and being with that person in the music in whatever capacity is possible and targeting the specific goal that you're trying to achieve.
Great. And while I understand that obviously to be a music therapist, it takes training and all that kind of stuff, but when it comes to teachers working in studios with, let's say, a severely autistic or nonverbal students, are there elements of that concept that they could take away with them today that they could try out in their next lesson if they're really having trouble with a child and communicating with them, to just perhaps kind of go, just stop the teaching and just let the child drive the lesson? Would that be
now,
a good idea?
Are you referring to the Gateway program that I've just done, or the teaching aspect?
I guess what I'm trying to do is connect the concept of music therapy with what the music teachers who are listening could potentially do in their teaching without being trained.
That was the goal of the Gateway Program. That is the goal. That's what we just spent a few days videoing, teacher training videos, talking about the issues of behavior, talking about the issues of working with a nonverbal child, and about what it's like to be with a child that doesn't necessarily follow directions, and how you can get into your moment with them, and how you can be creative as a teacher and discover new ways of relating. So obviously, if a teacher has a child with behavior problems, processing disorders where they don't get directions or they won't listen, they have to stop what they're doing and work with the music in another way. And so it might be just playing the song and singing. It might be stopping altogether. It might be using a puppet. It might be, oh, let's sit on the floor, or let's try to play this on the table. Or, you know, you have to kind of think of different ways to do the same activity. But I always say, if you have the experience of working with special needs, not the typical child that you teach, it's very, it expands your ability as a teacher. It expands your self-expressive possibilities, and it gets you more into knowing yourself at a deeper level of your own potential in terms of communication.
And I remember in episode 56, Dr. Scott Price was saying exactly the same thing. The quality of your teaching will just dramatically improve because you have to be so creative and flexible.
Yes, definitely. And as I said also in these videos with Neil, it's as if it's like if you picture an inch. Or, you know, within the inch, they're like the little millimeters and, you know, in a ruler, let's say. It's getting into those tiny spaces and stretching them out so that what you do in a minute or what you do with one tiny step becomes the bigger thing. So that in a regular lesson with a typical child, you could have one tiny step. And that could go in 30 seconds, but you can also have one tiny step and you can stretch that out to half an hour. Mm. And all of a sudden, you see your perspective grows and your creativity grows. And when you have to take one step and all of a sudden you're seeing it from the perspective, like through a magnifying glass or through a microscope, all of a sudden it's a new world of relating and a new world of information. And it's what you just said, it will make somebody a better communicator, a better teacher, to see information on new levels with new eyes. And and I think everyone should experience that. It's a very important thing to do and to discover.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned before about your integrated music therapy and art therapy, IMAT, and I found just on your website, I wanted to quote a couple of things and ask you a question about it. You say it's based on the premise that all expression is metaphorical. Art and music are interchangeable as sound, color, and form express the same feelings yet involve various parts of the brain. And to me, I was thinking about this and I was thinking, you know, to me, painting and drawing art seems so different to musical art. And yet you're talking about them being interchangeable. What do you mean by that?
I don't look at drawing or painting as project-oriented. To me, it's process-oriented the same way as musical improvisation. So it's not about making something beautiful. It's not about drawing a picture. Sometimes it is, but it's about putting paint on a piece of paper with the gestures that work with whatever you're feeling. It's about choosing a color that resonates with what you're feeling. A lot of kids will scribble things and then put it on the piano and then will play that picture. Oh, this is about the time when I went here, or the storm or the rain, or, you know, whatever it is about the brother or sister, about the mother, about the father, which is what I mean by metaphorical. Art therapy is about using symbolism. It's like a dream. Mm. You know, everything in a dream symbolizes something else. So the same thing with color and pictures. And if you get into that on that abstract level, the kids feel so free because they don't have to draw anything. A lot of these kids can't even hold a pen because they don't have very good fine motor. So they hold, you know, I don't know if you can see me on the screen, but they're like hold it with their, you know,
their
like
fist.
With their fist.
Yeah.
And so it's all about movement. And so we have a program with the Lang Lang International Music Foundation where we send art and music therapists into hospitals. And a lot of the kids, when they hear the music of the Lang Lang Young Scholars who are performing, it's a mixed kind of experience. They end up drawing and moving their pens to, or crayons or whatever paints to the rhythm, and they get drawn into the rhythm.
Okay.
But it's like, you know, there's such a thing as synesthesia where people will hear color and see sound. And that's sort of like what I'm referring to. It's, you know, yellow is a feeling and red is a feeling, and you can express that in music or a song, or, you know, it's just working with abstract symbols. And kids who are nonverbal or kids on the spectrum or kids who have processing problems love the fact that they can communicate in a non-cognitive way. They don't have to think in words. And a lot of these kids don't think linearly. So they think like this, you know, like a fingerprint lines. They don't think like one, two, you know, it's not linear. So using music and art kind of reflects their brains. And music is processed in the whole brain. Color is just part of that whole thing visually. And so it makes a holistic approach of feelings and processing in the brain to see the visual and the auditory come together in the same expression is very powerful for them.
Yeah, that's great. Would you be able to give us an example of a time perhaps in a piano lesson with a special needs student, perhaps an autistic student, that you would say, here's a great opportunity to get them off the piano on the floor with some crayons or, you know, or something, and just maybe you play the piano and let them draw. Could you think of a time when that would be great?
A lot of examples. For instance, this one boy who was very, he's on the autistic spectrum, but he's verbal. And he had very weak fingers to start, and he was very intimidated by the piano. Now he's doing really well. It's been 2 years that I'm working with him. But when he was at the piano, like he taught, you know, he would call his fingers noodles or spaghetti because they were so weak. And he didn't want to play. And so all of a sudden, I have this light in my room from a motion detector, and it was like a blinking red light. And I mean, it's going to sound a little strange,
it's all right.
But the blinking light, we drew a picture of a face. So it became an eye. And so we drew two eyes with this blinking light and a nose and a mouth. And the boy named this face his own name. I mean, for privacy, I'm not saying his name, but what, you know, let's say his name was Jay. His name isn't Jay, but let's say, so then it's Jay Dot, you know, and then it was about making up a song. And then we sat and drew a picture of the face, and then we put that on the piano. And then he went back and started like playing with one finger and being more motivated to make up the song of Jay Dot, you know, with his finger. And the whole thing became more fun, and he forgot about that he was uncomfortable and his fingers were so weak. And then he started actually playing and strengthening, you know, being able to poke at the keyboard. So, you know, things like that where you'll stop and do something, or take a puppet or a toy car. I mean, there's so many things. When you say example, this, you know, I've had so many examples. Even a little boy who comes in with a little tiny car, the only way he would, you know, he got uncomfortable, and then we had to stop. And so we parked, you know, with the two white notes. Those became the little garages of like, you know, you do stuff like that, which, I mean, some conventional teachers are not comfortable doing that.
Mm.
But when you're working with special needs kids, you have to go out of the box.
Mm.
And you just have to, because otherwise they'll leave the room or they'll cry, or they won't be comfortable. So you have to play. You have to be comfortable with playing with children. And a lot of times, if they're intimidated by playing piano, I'll take a puppet or a doll or a character, and just they can play using that character, but not with their hands, because they have such poor fine motor.
So you've mentioned puppets a couple of times. So you would actually give them the puppet, and the puppet would be the thing that touches the piano.
Yeah, and then they would feel so much better, because it's a projective technique of you're not really playing, it's the puppet.
I see.
Comfortable. Yeah. So it's just, you know, this is in the beginning. Once they get into it, it's much easier.
Mm. It's making that connection, isn't it? And finding out what it is that they're connected to. Is it the toy car that they can't let go of, and how can you incorporate that into the piano? Is it drawing or listening or beating drums? It must be the beginning.
I would say after the beginning stages, they get comfortable, and then it becomes more like regular lessons where they get into the structure and the routine, because children with autism or processing problems are very intimidated by new information. They're scared because they're so used to not being able to assimilate information that they're very defensive and walled off, and they have sensory problems, and they put down the wall. They don't want to learn anything new. So if you make it easy and you make it step by step where they can then be successful and have fun, they'll be motivated to keep going. That's the goal.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of Paul Harris's approach to piano teaching, which is about taking ingredients of the pieces. Before you ever see a piece of music, you take the main ingredients. So it might be a rhythmic pattern or a little melodic pattern or the fact that it's a staccato everywhere or octaves or whatever it is. And you just work with students on those ingredients, he calls them, well before they actually learn any piece. So they're bouncing around the piano because that's what the piece is going to be, or singing the tune or whatever it is. It sounds like that kind of approach.
It's very similar to the Simply Music Gateway concept, because a lot of it is very improvisational.
Which is great. I think that's great for all students, of course.
Improvising on the white notes, improvising on the black notes, improvising on a chromatic pattern, improvising on other patterns. So and the patterns are the patterns that appear in the music. For them, it's improvising on certain movements of the fingers that they have to work on. So the improvisational piece allows children to play piano and experience themselves playing before they even learn. So it's a similar type of thing.
Mm. Well, I was interested to talk to you about improvisation, because it's something that's very close to my heart. I do it with all my students. I'm a strong advocate for all teachers doing lots of improvisation with their students. And I understand you've written a book about this, correct me if I'm wrong, called Crossing the Improvisation Bridge. Is this right?
Well, yeah. That was really the precursor to the Simply Music Gateway.
Right, okay. I'm slowly going back in time.
Years ago when I was teaching kids with special needs, I put together the whole program. And that's what I called it, because through the bridge of improvisation, these children would learn piano and they would work on their fine motor problems. I mean, kids who didn't know what 1, 2, 3, you know, what finger comes after the thumb or what, they, through this improvisation, it provided a bridge to learning, a bridge to self-expression, a bridge to just music. So that's what I called it. But when I met Neil and I talked to him about this program and my methods, that it just became Simply Music Gateway. And the difference is that I would use any music or make up music, but in the Simply Music Gateway program, it uses the Simply Music.
Okay.
In the Foundation series. And so those pieces and those songs are used in the program. But the Crossing the Improvisation Bridge is really the method that I use to teach. So that was a long time ago.
Right. Well, can you give us some tips about improvisation and special needs students? I know we've mentioned a few little ideas so far. Have you got some other ones that you haven't mentioned?
Yes, I think for special needs kids, structure is important. So, I mean, I've done free improvisation with kids where they just play and I make up music with them and it becomes a piece.
So they could be playing anything.
Anything
at all.
And I mean,
in time, out of time, any notes, doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Mm.
I actually used to teach this at NYU called clinical improvisation, we called it, because it was about improvising with somebody and not having any structure, just meeting them where they are, finding the rhythm and finding the beat, providing a cushion of a place where they could be free enough. And these were people, you know, this kind of improvisation I would do with people who didn't even play piano. And it was a wonderful experience for me and for them. But getting to the special needs population, they, at the beginning, they need a structure, whether it's, okay, play all the black notes or play all the white notes. They need some kind of focus. And if you play a certain chord progression, typical 1-6-4-2-5-1 or something, that will go into the white notes perfectly. If you play anything in C, you know, or, and you can play sharp this or flat that or, you know, whatever. But if you play some simple chord progressions and have them just improvise to something that will go, that works really well.
Mm.
Black note improvisations are great because you can play in the key of F sharp and they can just bang away on the black notes and it'll sound good. And as long as, even chromatic if you play in F sharp, but to give them a cushion, to give them some kind of basic beat where they can feel grounded.
Mm.
So they will take off in an improvisation if you give them some grounding, whether it's harmonically or the beat or rhythmically. They need that grounding.
Mm. And that would help anyone trying to improvise but, for the first time. So it's a good recommendation for sure.
And I encourage, I mean, I am not a singer by any means, but I encourage people to sing with the kids, to make up a song. Like we are improvising, like anything, just, you know, just to tell them what they're doing, especially if they don't speak. It's fun. And they like hearing about a song about themselves. You know, Ellen is improvising. We are improvising. You know, just something, anything will work.
And matching and maybe connecting the puppets and the idea of a story to an improvisation.
Yeah. Yeah. That, and sometimes I put together little books. This is all at the beginning. This is how to get them learning. Once somebody's really into the program and they really are learning already, like after 6 months, I don't really need to do that anymore. It's more of a, it gets more into the structured learning and then they are very comfortable sitting at the piano. This really, all of these things happen in the beginning.
Okay. And that's because once the student gets to know you and you've made a relationship and you've got a structure, they can settle a bit more and focus on other things. Is that right?
Yeah. And they get more confident because they're learning. Because they're doing it, because they're able to play. Their fingers are getting stronger from the certain exercises that they do. They're becoming piano players, and they're very proud of themselves. And so as that grows, so does the ability to sit at the piano without having to use other kind of techniques.
And does that go for high functioning as well as nonverbal and all students in your experience?
Well, a high functioning child will sit at, I mean, I teach typical kids as well. I mean, they just take the piano lesson. I usually am very conventional with, I've taught very advanced pianists too when I was teaching at NYU. Now they don't, you don't need to do, I mean, with a typical student, I don't think you need to do that stuff.
No,
I don't know.
No.
Unless they're really little.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're really young, but otherwise typical student, they just learn.
But I guess my question is for teachers perhaps who have taken on a special needs student and are perhaps listening to this and really struggling, we've given them some ideas, but I think you might have also given them some hope that if they do it right, it gets easier.
Absolutely. There's always hope. It's not even hope. It's that, yes, If you devote yourself and you make a connection, you will help this child learn. The thing is, you have to eliminate time. You have to eliminate expectation and eliminate any conventional goals, or you just are in a timeless place. And whatever they learn, they learn. Whatever they do, they do. The most important thing is that they have a good time and that they enjoy the experience and that they feel good with the teacher. So it doesn't matter if they only learn one thing for 6 months. It doesn't matter. It matters that they love coming to music. And if you're open as a teacher and you're willing to put aside expectations and levels and this or that, you know, whatever, and it just becomes a music experience, it will always be positive. It will never be negative. You just have to reach that person. It may take a while to reach them. I mean, I've had kids who are severe behavior problems, severe. And I just had one boy today, as a matter of fact, who I couldn't believe that I was really working with today on a real level of music, whereas for the past few months, all he wanted to do was pinch and scratch. And he's little, you know. So, I mean, if he was like a big 18-year-old who wanted to pinch and scratch, I probably wouldn't be seeing him anymore. But a little boy, you know. And so I just was patient, like, you know, let him be himself, play, sing songs, you know. And then today, he sat with me for a full 20 minutes and played. And that was amazing. And he liked it. And he's profoundly autistic.
Right.
So there is always, hope is the wrong word. There's always potential. And there's always creativity within the child. And you have to recognize that every child, like we said at the beginning of this, is capable of making music. Every child is musical. Every child has that in them, no matter what level, whether it's typical average musicality or like I've taught real savants who are autistic, who are brilliant, you know, which is very exciting. So it's just a matter of being open to the experience.
I almost want to wrap it up there because what you've just said is phenomenal. Like, it just means so much to hear those words. And I know a lot of teachers are going to really enjoy hearing what you've said because, you know, it means a lot, doesn't it?
And I've been in this field for so many years and I work a lot and I see a lot of kids. And sometimes when I'm really tired and I'm, you know, the end of the day, it's like, oh, I'm so tired, you know, and then I'll see the eyes of a child like today, like this boy. And I think to myself, look at the impact that I'm bringing to this boy. The music is, he gets it. Who would have thought that this would happen? And that's very rewarding. And then the ripple effect is great because the families who are so frustrated and sometimes severely depressed and, you know, they have so little hope for their child and struggling. And then all of a sudden they see that child doing this and it's a miracle to them. And they're so happy. And so you bring that joy, not just to the child, but to the family, and you're doing a great thing. So I encourage any teacher, any music teachers, you don't have to be a music therapist. You just have to be a person with a heart and open and willing to try. And children, these kind of kids are like all children. Children just want to be loved and have fun and connected to, and that's what it's about.
Brilliant. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there because you've just summarized everything so brilliantly.
Okay,
that's great. But look, I did want to find out where do people go to find out about the Simply Music Gateway?
You can look it up online. I think the Simply Music website has Simply Music listed.
Yep. All right, we'll pop a link in the show notes anyway.
Yeah,
there's
descriptions of if you're a music therapist, if you're an occupational therapist, if you're a music teacher, if you're a kindergarten teacher, if you're an elderly caregiver, how to use the program. I just did the videos this past August, so I'm sure they're not fully edited and they're not online yet, but hopefully they will be, and hopefully they will help teachers get an understanding of more about what we're talking about.
And so and for teachers to access that, is it a paid thing or how does it work?
I'm not sure of the details.
Okay.
So I can't answer those questions, but I think the best thing to do is to go on the Simply Music website, to look up Simply Music Gateway, to email or wherever they have that link for messages, say, when will this be available? It's Simply Music Gateway Part 1.
Okay, and, great.
And we'll see how it goes. If people are really interested, we'll do Part 2, which is a whole other thing. But I think, yeah, that's the best thing is to go on the website and look up and send the message of when, you know, we're interested so that Neil knows that there are people out there. You know, I've gotten emails from people all over the world. Is there a program? I don't know what to do. And so I always say, well, there will be soon, you know. So, yeah, they should just go on the website.
And for those who might have missed episode 57, I also interviewed Susan Bassett, who's put together her own. She's just a piano teacher who's had some experience, fully admits she's not a music therapist or anything, but she's just put together a program that other teachers can freely use. It's all up there and online and available. So in the meantime, if you want to just see what other teachers are doing, check out episode 57.
That's great.
Yeah, it's great. Look, I think, and Scott Price, who I mentioned in episode 56, he's started a new blog, which you might be familiar with. We've got the link in the show notes. I can't remember it off the top of my head. It's a piano for special needs blog, pretty much. So an article a week from professionals. So the information is becoming, it's getting out there now.
It's great. And the more people who do this just validates the fact that this population should be playing instruments. So, and should be playing the piano, should be doing music, and it's great. So the more, the better. That's what I always say, because then everybody will say, oh, this is possible. This is a reality. It's not like, you know, something new or strange that couldn't be. It's just, it exists. So the more people doing it, the better.
That's great. And if they want to find out more about you, it's artsforhealing.org.
.org. Yeah, they can read all about Arts for Healing and they can contact me with any questions. There's an email listed there that they can ask any questions.
That's brilliant. Brilliant. So show notes for this episode will be at timtoppin.com/episode59. And next episode, episode 60, I'm actually speaking with a clinical psychologist all about autism and special needs and some tips from the clinical psychology side. Should be really good.
That's great. Yeah. I look forward to seeing that.
Brilliant. Thank you so much
for having me.
You're welcome. I really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye. Bye.
If the idea of a piano teacher's community where you get to access the best educational resources, rub shoulders with expert teachers from around the world, and have immediate access to feedback for any of your questions, then Inner Circle membership is for you. The Inner Circle is my private community of piano teachers from across the globe who share a commitment to creating and delivering the most inspiring, modern, and progressive learning experiences for their students. Membership is now open, so head to timtoppin.com/community to find out more and get involved today. I can't wait to see you on the inside.